the daily service led by the Reverend Dr. Nick Bundock. On FM now, and given that this January marked 50 years since the death of one of the literary figures of the 20th century, T.S. Eliot, our Book of the Week features readings from a new biography by the Scottish poet Robert Crawford, which charts Eliot's life up to the publication of The Wasteland in 1922. We hear of his childhood and childhood echoes now in Young Eliot.
Before he was T.S., he was Tom. That was what his prosperous parents and five older siblings called him. Tom was loved and happy. He and his mother Lottie treasured memories of his earliest infancy. In adulthood, he assured her he still cherished her singing him a song, The Little Tailor, while the firelight made patterns on the ceiling of his childhood home. When he was born in St. Louis, 1888, his parents were 45. Lottie, Charlotte Shumper Elliott, gave birth on Wednesday, the 26th of September. Anxiety mingled with jubilation. 3 years earlier, Lottie's daughter, Theodora, had been born severely deformed and only lived for 16 months. Relatives outside the immediate family worried that his parents' transfer to baby Thomas, a morbid sense of trepidation that later conditioned his boyhood. The new boy's father, Hal, Henry Ware Elliott, sent a telegram to relatives in Oregon. Lottie and little Thomas are well. Thomas Stearns Elliott's name was chosen with care. Stearns had been Lottie's maiden name. Having called their first son, Henry, after his father, the couple gave their new son the first name of Hal's elder brother, the Oregon-based Reverend Thomas Lamb Elliott, a minister in the Unitarian Church that meant so much to all these Elliots. Tom's family tree was formidable. A distant ancestor, Andrew Elliott, had emigrated from East Coker in Somerset, England, to Beverly in Massachusetts around 1670. Through him, St. Louis Elliots could claim kinship with a substantially Unitarian New England elite. Baby Tom was related distantly to poets John Greenleaf Whittier, James Russell Lowell, to novelist Henry Melville and Nathaniel Hawthorne, to memoirist Henry Adams, and to the second and sixth presidents of the United States, John Adams and John Quincy Adams. Few squealing infants have had quite so much to live up to. Lottie cared deeply about education and social welfare. Her passions encompassed poetry, philosophy, and religion. But the poetry, she wrote, found only limited outlets, often in Unitarian journals. Partially deaf by the time of Tom's childhood, his father had once been an eager musician, artist, and poet. True, Hal still enjoyed drawing humorous sketches, not least of cats. And Tom remembered in adulthood a wonderful set of comic animals that he drew. By Tom's childhood, however, Hal, the young poet, had been repressed and replaced by Henry Ware Elliott Sr., the bearded, chess-playing businessman who had become a prominent figure in the management of the Hydraulic Press Brick Company of St. Louis. In Lottie Elliott, the vein of poetry was not repressed. 3 months pregnant with Tom, she wrote, as she often did, at the advent of spring, a poem celebrating Easter. Liking to read the Bible before she wrote, Lottie Elliott's poetry was steeped in high-mindedness. Tom's younger cousin, Abigail Elliott, thought his mother wasn't much interested in babies. But she cherished her children as well as her verse, and grew to love her poet son with particular intensity. In thriving St. Louis, the family lived in some style. Running southwards through the grid plan, for well over a mile past the Elliott's house in the direction of the Mississippi, Locust Street was named after a familiar American tree. Inside the Elliott's substantial four-story brick-built home with its heavy dark wood furniture and patterned carpets, hung portraits of ancestors with the surname Elliot, Stearns, Cranch, Blood, or Dawes. Tom had never met Grandfather Elliot, who died in 1887. Grandfather Elliot had travelled to Europe. In the American South, he had bought slaves and set them free. Straight out of Harvard Divinity School, Grandfather Elliot had reached St. Louis in 1834 and founded the first Unitarian church west of the Mississippi. Tom and his family still served and attended it. Social reformer, zealous preacher, occasional poet, and part-time professor of philosophy at Washington University, handsome, stern-countenance Grandfather Elliot was dead, but unavoidable. Visible in a large oil portrait painted by a Cranch, his deeds were praised in a memorial tablet at his Church of the Messiah. Lottie Elliot worked on a biography of him during Tom's boyhood. It was dedicated to Lottie's children, lest they forget. A sense of this dead patriarch stayed with Tom from boyhood to old age. I was brought up to be very much aware of him. The standard of conduct was that which my grandfather had set. Propriety mattered in every word and deed. When I was a small boy, I was reproved by my family for using the vulgar phrase, okay. His upbringing was strict, but cosseted. The family was looked after by a team of servants. The Elliot's house was set back just a little behind railings from the tree-lined sidewalk, and in summer almost screened by foliage. Coachmen, wearing dark top hats, clattered by outside along dusty Locust Street. In a metropolis with a French name and heritage, there were shutters to the sides of most of the windows of the Elliot home, making it look just a little French. Age 3, Tom played indoors with a favourite soft toy, a little dog with floppy ears and black, beady eyes, Toby. A few years later, sitting in his well-tailored jacket, Tom learned to play the baby grand piano. There were books aplenty, from a set of Dickens novels to An Evil and Adulterous Generation by Tom's great-great-great-grandfather, the Reverend Andrew Elliot of Boston. One friend of his sister's remembered Tom hiding away, pale and thin and shy, keeping out of the way of his sister's female guests. Though he learned to manage it through formality and occasional bluster, his shyness never left him. In one early picture, taken around 1891, he's holding Toby and dressed for cold weather in an ankle-length hooded coat trimmed with fur. Photographed a year or so later, long hair combed over large ears, and with an enormous pale bow tied at his neck, he appears carefully neat. He was, after all, an Elliot. The Elliots also cherished, from a safe distance, some more scandalous aspects of their family history. Lottie's parents were Thomas Stearns of Lunenburg, Massachusetts, and Charlotte Blood. Tom, in distant Missouri, called them Grandpa and Grandma, far away. Lottie liked to claim that one of her ancestors had been Colonel Blood, who had stolen the British crown jewels. What small boy, however shy, would not relish being related to a jewel thief called Colonel Blood? Growing up in the soundscape of St. Louis meant inhabiting a city where the highbrow European music of Wagner was performed not far from sophisticated ragtime. Scott Joplin, who lived for some years less than a mile from the Elliott's house, published his ragtime tune, The Entertainer, in St. Louis in 1902. To live at the confluence of these musics was part of St. Louis's gift to Tom. It helped shape the lilt of his poetry and contributed to his love of dancing. Socially, the area around the Elliots' large house in Locust Street was on the slide. By the 1880s, most well-to-do white folks were leaving these once exclusive neighbourhoods for newly constructed suburban mansions further from the river. The Elliots, however, stayed put to remain close to Tom's elderly grandmother. Their determination cut Tom off from playmates his family thought suitable. He was also set apart by an intimate secret. He had been born with a congenital double hernia, which meant from early on he had to wear a truss. This was another aspect of his makeup conducive to shyness. He and his